This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, it's Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Mike Somich coming to you here on a Sunday in which we are watching the final go down. Over at Roland Garros right now, Jannik Sinner takes the first two sets, but then Alcaraz fights back, wins 6-4 in the third set and is up 3-2 here in the fourth set. You said you got in live. You got some live tennis action.
I don't bet a lot of tennis. I was sitting sitting in the hotel room this morning preparing for the show, and I'm watching this match. And, you know, Sinner was I thought, very good in the first set. I thought Alcaraz really clawed back in the second, went to a tiebreak. Sinner able to win the tiebreak. And I just started to have flashes back to Rome a couple weeks ago where Alcaraz just pummeled Sinner. You look at the live line, it was as high as 10-1. I got 8-1. It's like, yeah, I'll take a little sprinkle just to have some action. And now I'm pretty excited about this ticket. I mean, we're on serve here in the fourth set, 3-3. So Alcaraz will be serving to try and go up 4-3. Feels like we're headed for a four-set tiebreaker, and the winner of that tiebreaker wins the match.
Look at you already predicting what's going to happen. Can you predict? Can you get an exact result?
I mean, if I could take tiebreak in this set right now,
I
would do it. Because, look, you watch enough tennis and you kind of feel how it doesn't feel like either of these guys is going to break the other one. And if no one breaks anyone, you're going 6-6 to the tiebreak. And if you're Jannik Sinner and you are coming in here as a dog and you win the first two sets, you win a very, very important tiebreak in the second set, and then you lose the next two, it's got to be tough to get up for that fifth set. I realize it's a fifth set final at a major, but at the same time, I mean, it is just heartbreaking to even be in that position, especially against Alcaraz, who just pummeled you in Rome a couple weeks ago.
We will get to everything that went down last night here momentarily, but first, we do have a first pitch that is coming here in just a couple of minutes. This is the Padres on the road at the Brewers. Ryan Burgert for the Padres, Aaron Civale for the Brewers. This is -176 for the Brewers at home, +143 Padres on the road. 8.5 is our total, shaded towards the over.
Yeah, I like how that was the Ryan Who voice there from Matt. Look, I went through this, and this is not for everybody, but I'm going to lay 270 here with Peralta race to 3 strikeouts. Burgert's strikeout total, 3.5. He is a reliever who has started one game. He struck out 2 in that game. And in the other relief appearances, he only has 2 strikeouts. He is not a high strikeout, dominant, going to just blow people away kind of guy, which we see from some of these relievers that turn starters. And Peralta's going to get his 3. So I realized laying -270, not for everybody, but I'll lay -270 here. Peralta, first to 3 strikeouts against Burgert. If you want to just take Burgert under 3.5 Ks, don't hate that either.
Right.
I think it's exponentially more likely Peralta wins the race than Burgert goes under, but I do think both happen.
So we talked a lot about the Belmont yesterday across this network. You had special programming all week long. We had a special show about all of this. And when it was all said and done, Sovereignty down the stretch gets it done. Journalism second, Baeza third. I know you were pretty high on Baeza heading into this thing, but Sovereignty really did kind of show maybe it's the best horse in the world right now.
He dusted him. There's really no other way to put it. This was a phenomenal effort. Final time in 2 minutes, 0.63 seconds. It was one of the fastest mile and a quarter races we've seen at Saratoga. Period, stop, end of sentence. The track record's 159-1, but there's only been, I think it's 7 horses who have ever run a mile and a quarter at Saratoga this fast in the last 40-plus years. So dominant performance, and he was under a hand ride late. He wasn't even being asked. He also changed up his style, which I thought was just wild to me, that he was not coming from the back of the pack. He was actually on the inside as high as second at one point in the first turn. So he was much closer to the pace and then still able to kick on and close home. Journalism looked loaded turning for home. And Sovereignty made him look like he was standing still when he ran by him. So just a phenomenal effort here by Sovereignty. I'm a little concerned what this does, though, Matt. Because you have the Derby winner skip the Preakness and then romp in the Belmont.
And everyone's going to wonder.
Not just everyone's going to wonder, because you don't have to wonder. He would have won the Preakness based on the way that race ran. But what happens next year? Is this now a trend?
Yeah.
Do people start deciding, I've got the Derby winner, I want to win the Belmont too, the Triple Crown's not as important to me? And the concerning part about this and all of it is that Sovereignty's probably going to win the Travers, the biggest grade one race over the summer for three-year-olds. Sovereignty's probably going to be one of the favorites in the Breeders' Cup Classic. If he creates this campaign where he wins the Derby, skips the Preakness, wins the Belmont, and then you see him win major races in the latter half of the year, are other trainers going to look at this and say, well, here's the framework
to how to have the blueprint.
How have a three-year-old make a ton of money on the racetrack and be just as valuable in the breeding shed if he won the Triple Crown or not.
Yeah.
And so that kind of fuels flame to the fire of changing up the style of how you're running the Triple Crown as well.
We talked yesterday a little bit, and this is a tiny bit of sports talk radio, but we talked a little bit yesterday about, hey, you know, it's about time, and I know you've been talking about it for the last year or so, and some people have been talking about it for the last 10 years, but it's probably time for the industry to get together and say, like, hey, listen, if we are ever really going to take a step forward, we're going to have to redo this calendar, because you and I talked about yesterday. You're right in smack dab in the middle of two different sports finals, right? Then, and you don't know for a fact, but there's a UFC, there's a college baseball super regionals going on. There's all these different things going on. And we were like, you know, you wait 2 weeks and you're clear of all of that, you know, like you're the only thing going, you know?
I also think if you're trying to get in the general public, is three races in 5 weeks overkill?
Yeah.
Does it, like, are you going to throw three parties?
Yeah.
You're going to throw a Derby party, a Preakness party, and a Belmont party? Probably not.
No.
But if you spread these out and you have them over 3 months, I could see people throwing a party once every month for these races, but every 3 weeks or 3 and 5 weeks seems like a little aggressive. I do have to say, hats off to the Saratoga track team. This was a disaster of a racetrack in the morning. It was an awful racetrack at the end of the day on Friday. It was fast by the time that we ran the Belmont Stakes, a very fair racetrack as well. So hats off there to the grounds crew at Saratoga.
Last night, you saw Merab Dvalishvili go in and just absolutely destroy Sean O'Malley. I mean, just as dominant a performance of a guy, it proved the odds makers right. Right, I thought that it had moved too far. Right,
big adjustment from the first fight.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at it basically a coin flip in the first fight, in which I was all over. You remember, I was all over Merab in that first fight.
Him.
You know, but it moved so far that I was like, okay, listen, I'll buy into the injury angle for Sean O'Malley. I'll buy into the fact that he was humbled in that first fight. I'll buy into the thing that he changed his lifestyle and took this fight and this fight camp more seriously. It didn't matter. It wouldn't have mattered. The pressure that Merab put on, absolutely relentless. And, you know, you see outstruck O'Malley. Everyone was talking about, okay, well, as long as he can keep it on the feet, right? As long as he can keep it on the feet, he's got a shot. Mike, he kept it on. When they were on the feet, he was just getting pummeled. And then he gets taken down five. Merab lands 5 of the 12 takedown attempts that he has, ends up submitting, obviously, there in the third round. But it was a absolute domination.
They just dusted him. Yeah. So who does he fight next? I mean, that's the question, right? Because this was supposed to be the guy.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to throw around several different names. Sandhagen, Mike, most likely is going to get the next shot at him. But it's just, you know, again, you look at that last night and you just understand, like, you know, he's put together this ridiculous win streak that he's got going on. And you can see these guys that are gym rats, he has cardio
for days.
I mean, like, that pace that he kept, like, just, if you guys have never just hit up, go, if you have an option to hit a punching bag, just go hit a punching bag for 30 seconds and see how and see how you feel afterwards.
I gotta say, it's actually hard to just hit a punching bag.
Yeah,
like, you don't realize there's not as much give as you see when these guys who actually know how to punch
take a if a buddy is willing, try to take your see if you can take your buddy down and see the energy that it takes to try and wrestle someone to the ground. And then the fact that he's 5 of 12 on the takedown history, by the way, means he missed on 7 of them, so that's energy expended that didn't get. And then the pace of throwing all the punches, it was unbelievable. Merab's going to move up in that pound-for-pound ranking out there for sure, and he deservedly so, for sure.
Yeah, it was dominant performance, right? Yeah. You mentioned if O'Malley keeps it on the feet, he's got a shot. He had no shot.
No.
It was just over.
Absolutely no shot whatsoever. Of course, we have basketball, and we will talk a ton of basketball today as we sit right now. 11 is the line there on the Thunder, 228.5. Plus 390. If you think the Pacers get it done again, plus 390. You can get 4-1 on your money there.
Yeah, pretty. I mean, not surprising we saw this line tick up. I was kind of hoping we'd see OKC win game one impressively. Obviously, they fell apart. And we'd see the line tick down so I could bet OKC in game two. I was hoping to get like 7, 7.5, somewhere in there. Now sitting at 11, it's like, oh, man, that's a big number. But
it's a huge number.
I keep flashing back to the series against the Nuggets.
Yeah.
They lose 111 to 109 that first game. Close game. Tight game. Absolutely blow the doors off them. Put up 149 points in the second game of that series. You wonder if there's a comp to that series where it's like, okay, you have our attention. Here comes the A-plus effort.
Yeah. it's and look, I already have lost a ton of money on the series. I did bet the, you know, win the first game, win the series thing. I've already lost a ton of money on this. I had OKC undefeated at home. I all the different stuff like that. So I don't think I can even make money on this series now, like without betting like an idiot, which we advocate not doing. We're not chasing. But man, you watch that and I felt like it was a good handicap until it wasn't, right? I mean, they're up 15. Everything's working. Everything's rocking and rolling. Kelly Bidlin played some alt numbers on things. It looks like those are all going to get home. Everything's rocking and rolling. Then it just crumbles right there at the end. I'm not really beating myself up. Yeah, okay. I lost a bunch of money. Like, I'm not beating myself up over it. I still think that the handicap was proper. They just didn't keep the foot on the gas the entire time
there. So I took some Pacers plus 800 in the fourth quarter because I was starting to get worried with about 2.5 minutes mm-hmm. left to try and cover some of that. Yeah. And now I'm wondering, do I come back in at minus 275 on OKC to win the series? Because mm-hmm. I think it's a great price. I think OKC still wins the series. I think that, you know, you look at the 24 turnovers from the Pacers in that game, only 11 points off turnover. That is absurd. Like, how do you score less than half a point off every turnover that you create in the NBA, where you usually can run those out and get easy baskets? And it's not replicatable. If you watch what happened in game one. Now, a lot of the Pacers wins have not been replicatable. So who knows? Maybe they're just an anomaly to it, but I'm probably playing team total over tomorrow night.
Following this right now, Alcaraz serving to save his life here in
immediate
the match.
Break after five, I
yes, 5-3. Center, we'll let you know if this thing is actually over by the time we come back. But when we come back, we'll have Colby Conway talk a little baseball.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on a Sunday. Matt Brown, Mike Somich. Same game is still going. We have no update for you.
Sinner had 3 match points.
It's the same game.
He now is on Deuce. So not great for Sinner there, but he does serve for the match no matter what happens here.
We're like, we'll have an update for you when we come back. No, we do not. There's no update. They're still playing the same game that they were playing before. So that said, Alcaraz with a big ace right there to get add to try to extend this match. Keep you updated as that plays out here. Now joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, Colby Conway, MLB analyst over at Fantasy Alarm. Colby, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Happy Sunday, fellas.
Yeah, rocking and rolling over here. Love Sunday baseball for us. We get some games that get going while we're on air, so we have some live sweats and all that. Of course, first pitch just happened actually out there right now in San Diego and Milwaukee. So if you guys are
strikeouts. Peralta walked two in the top of the first. Only threw 19 pitches.
Right.
But walked two and struck out none. So don't love that, but it's okay. It's more a bet against Berger and striking anybody out.
Right. So let's look into the slate here, and I'm looking at my cheat sheet and know that you are looking at the total in the Reds and Diamondbacks.
Yeah, when you look at this, we have Zach Allen and Brady Singer. And interestingly enough, we have two pitchers that are on the better side of their home and road splits, but you can't trust either of these two right now. First and foremost, we got wind blowing out at Great American Ballpark today, which is already one of the most hitter-friendly environments in Major League Baseball. So we take a look at Zach Gallen. He's been putrid this season. And when you look, yes, he's coming off a pretty good start, actually his best start in about a month or so, but 6.35 ERA, a 1.59 homer per nine over his last 28 and a third innings, has had some issues with left-handed hitters since he put a couple of lefties in that lineup. So I think that the Reds have themselves a good little offensive day. And on the other side, all season long, you have not wanted to throw pitchers against Arizona. They've been one of the best all season long. And even over the last 2 weeks, they still have healthy marks in terms of their ISO at 179 and a 424 slug. And if you look, Arizona is no stranger to playing some high scoring contests. So I think the line sits for that at about over 9.5. So I'm looking for double digit runs in that game.
Yeah, I stared at that over for a very, very long time. I didn't get there, and then you had me when you said the wind's blowing out at Great American Ballpark. So I'll take a little bit of over action there as well. A game that you did bet that has already started, so I want to at least bring this one up here. The Brewers taking on the Padres here. First pitch is already off, but you did like the Brewers on the run line. You can still get that minus 1.5 at plus 110 during the bottom of the first right now.
Yeah, over here on my notes that I wrote for the thing, in all capital letters for Freddie Peralta, I has just needs to control the walks. 2+ walks in 5 straight of his starts. And what does he do? Walks 2 of the first 3 batters he faces. Fortunately, does get the double play to get out of that first inning, get through really the more impressive part of this San Diego lineup. But here's the thing. Freddie Peralta at home this year has been money. Sub 2 ERA. The whip's at an even 1 strikeout rate, just below 27%. And the Padres do have some name talent in that lineup, but over the last 2 weeks, they've been a bottom 5 offense in baseball. They're scuffling a little bit. Brewers are hot, winning 8 of their last 10. And again, when it comes down to it, you have the Padres, who have not really done well against teams with a winning record. They've really bolstered their win-loss record on the year against some of the more poor teams in baseball. And then they're just sub 500 on the road. So Brewers are playing better ball. They got the better pitcher on the mound. So, you know, looking at it here, yes, the Brewers' first 2 batters have gotten out in the bottom of the first, but I like the Brewers to win this game on the right arm of Freddie Peralta.
Houston Astros going to be on the road at the Cleveland Guardians. Brandon Walter versus Tanner Bibee. This is minus 143 in favor of the Guardians at home, plus 118-ish and around. Of course, always shop around for the Astros on the road. 7.5 is our total, shaded here towards the under. What are you looking at in this one?
I think the Astros are going to come out on top. The past couple of times when Cleveland's faced a lefty, really loved that. I know recently it was Rodon and Freed for the Yankees that have had good success against them. And overall, Cleveland's just been really bad against left-handed pitching this season. You look at their numbers against righties, they don't strike out a ton. And then against lefties, they're the 6th worst in baseball in 2025 in terms of striking out against lefties, with the 3rd lowest ISO and the 4th lowest weighted on base average. I'm not convinced Brandon Walter is the be-all end-all of left-handed starters in Major League Baseball, but he was effective in his lone start this year against the Rays. And when you look at Tanner Bibee's numbers, he's had a little bit of an issue this year, at least compared to last year, and he's got some reverse splits working. And if I remember correctly, I think Houston's got 8 right-handed hitters in the lineup today, only sending out 1 lefty. So a lot of righties going up against Bibee and his reverse splits. We got Isak Paredes, who's getting hot. I believe Noah Altuve in the lineup as well, but I don't think it matters. The main thing here is Cleveland faces a lefty. They're not good against them. I like the Astros to win this game outright.
Feels like when we look back on this baseball season, one of the main storylines is, how are you able to make money when the Rockies were playing somebody? Because it's very hard to lay massive numbers. Today you got the Mets minus 238 with Tyler McGill on the hill. You can get the Rockies plus 224 if you're so inclined. But if you lay the run and a half, it's still minus 190. And so I've been trying to find ways to make money against the Rockies here. I've been playing batters to get RBIs when you're getting plus money and they're sitting in that 2, 3, 4, 5 type spot. Today you're going with a different direction here with this Mets offense.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You play the Rockies, they're going to be heavy dogs in every single game. So you got to find where your avenues are. And today, I think it's the first 5 Mets team total over 3.5. I'm not surprised that it's at 3.5, but like looking over at DraftKings right now, it's minus 105 at that line. And here's the thing. I was pumping Chase Dolander when it came to fantasy baseball and he got the call. And I'm not afraid to admit I've been pretty wrong. He's really struggled. He had the IL stint even coming back. Not really much for him there. And here's the thing. Walks and home runs have been a problem for him, and left-handed hitters. So first, let's go his home numbers: 8.66 ERA, 1.8 WHIP, 3.06 homer per 9, a double-digit walk rate. That's not good. And then he's been poor against lefties. And what do you know? With the Mets lineup right away to open up the game, he's going to see Francisco Lindor, he's going to see Brandon Nimmo, he's going to see Juan Soto, Pete Alonso is going to be in there as well. So I really like the Mets to jump out on top here. They've been very good against right-handed pitching all season long. And this game is at Coors Field. Offense is going to be inflated. Mets are going to steamroll Dolander and the Rockies today and score a lot of runs in the first 5.
Talking to Colby Conway from Fantasy Alarm. Colby, how are you treating Spencer Strider?
I really want to buy in. The velo's down a little bit, which probably isn't all that surprising given the procedure that he had. Tried to avoid Tommy John with the internal brace procedure in that elbow. I do like the matchup. The Giants haven't been all that great. It's just Strider's not the elite option that we saw pre-elbow injury that he had. I do like it. I've stayed away from this game a little bit. Landon Rupp for the Giants has been pretty good. If I were to have a lean in this game, I still think I would go Braves money line with the minus 125 that we're seeing there. I don't feel great about it. I did look at this game a little bit, kind of just staring at it a little bit, but ultimately couldn't pull the trigger on anything with it. I don't have too strong of a lean there to really, you know, put some money on it, put my money where my mouth is. But if I had to do something, I would lean Braves money line.
Yeah, pro tip, if you stare at a game for a long time and you can't bet it, just don't. Like I have made that mistake where I stare and stare. I'm like, I'll just click the button. Don't. Just don't click the button. Chicks dig the long ball, and so do bettors. You've got a home run prop for us as well. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't do home run ones all too often, but I'm looking at it today. And I'm going to go with Trevor Larnach of the Minnesota Twins to send one out over the fences. And really, as much of it's an endorsement of Larnach, it's an indictment of Bowden Francis going for Toronto. I know he had the good stretch run, helped some of my fantasy teams down the stretch last season. But here's the thing this year. Of any pitcher with 50 innings pitched on the year, Bowden Francis has the worst homer per nine, sitting at 268. The next closest is at even two. Then take a look at his numbers against left-handed hitters. His 3.62 homer per nine allowed to left-handed hitters is nearly a full home run per nine innings higher than the next closest, which is Tanner Houck at 286. Left-handed hitters have absolutely crushed Bowden Francis this season. We also have a little bit of wind blowing out at Target Field. And if you're a BVP truther out there, batter versus pitcher data, Larnach's lone at bat against Bowden Francis did see himself hit a home run. Larnach has an 829 OPS against right-handed hitters. So Trevor Larnach's my home run call of the day.
Colby, maybe this is a personal question for two guys on the desk right here that are in fantasy baseball leagues that might be struggling in certain categories. Who's someone that we need to go pick up this week?
Yeah, give me a waiver wire pitcher because I've got Francis and Gallen. You're just smashing my fantasy team right now. Who's the waiver wire pitcher we got to go get up?
Yeah, I wouldn't be too excited about those two in terms of
thanks.
Some waiver wire options. Good old Ernie Clement for Toronto has been pretty good, swinging a hot stick. Larnach might be available as long as they're going to see a stretch of righties. You're going to love to have him hitting in the upper third of that Minnesota lineup. And then in terms of some pitching, man, if Brandon Walter can pitch well, there's a chance he could potentially stick. I'm definitely not looking at a guy like Chase Dolander. Cade Horton is interesting. I think there's some more strikeout upside with him. We just haven't seen it yet. Does draw a somewhat toughish start today against Detroit, even though they've been scuffling a little bit of late. Those are the main ones I'm looking at. One's Michael McGreevy. I can't stand the matchup today. I'm scared to death for him going against that Dodgers lineup, but he's a very intriguing arm for the St. Louis Cardinals. And honestly, they should not send him back down after the start. Let him up there. He'd be a good addition to the rotation and for your fantasy teams as well.
He is Colby Conway. Find his work over at Fantasy Alarm. Colby, appreciate it and good luck today.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, fellas. Y'all too.
Guys, $199 will get you a year of VSiN Pro. And if you use the promo code BOOK, it's also going to get you a free book as well. It includes a pre-order of Josh Applebaum's book, NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. So VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code BOOK, $199 for an entire year. Get those best bets, get the betting splits, get the video feed, and of course, all of our betting guides available today, VSiN.com/subscribe.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somage on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt and Mike, and you know, we're going to give these baseball games their due, but
there's a tennis match going on.
Carlos Alcaraz down three match points, love 40, rattles off three games in a row now. Mike's going to get his tiebreak.
That was
so incredibly obvious was going to happen as it was 5-3 down three match points. And instead, here we go as Sinner has a 40-30 in the 12th game of the set here. But boy, I mean, this is some not that we didn't know this already. This is some ridiculously high level stuff going on right now.
Yeah, just, I mean, absolutely unbelievable. You have Alcaraz down 5-3, down love 40 with serve. He serves back, wins five straight points to win the game. Makes it 5-4, but then you got to break Sinner, who, by the way, very difficult to break, especially on clay. Dude has a monster serve, and Alcaraz does it on 15. Doesn't even mess around, right? If he wins the game 15, and then comes back, holds serve. We're headed to a tiebreak now at 6-6 in the fourth set. Sinner trying to close out the match.
So incredibly good. We want you guys to watch us, but if you broke away for like 10 minutes, I'd understand.
No. Don't break away. Just go to your DVR.
Second screen us.
Record the game, the match, and then we'll talk about it as it goes, and then watch it as it concludes here.
We have a first pitch coming in about 5 minutes. It is the Phillies at the Pirates. This is Chris Sanchez versus Paul Skeens. Doesn't happen too often here on the show, but we are heads up here on this one. You are going with the Phillies. I am going with the Pirates. Paul Skeens has been every bit of Paul Skeens of late, and everything you are looking for out of Paul Skeens, you're getting. Now, the team is terrible at hitting the baseball, but guess what here, Mike Somich?
What's that?
Who do you think has the fifth worst weighted on base over the last 2 weeks in all of Major League Baseball?
Well,
it's a leading question.
I'm a pretty smart person, so I'm going to go with the Phillies.
It is. Yeah. The Phillies have not been hitting the ball at all.
They didn't even need to look that up.
They have been struggling mightily swinging the bat. And then, of course, we know Bryce Harper on the IL, so he is not in there today as well. Shockingly, I know that it seems like the Pirates can't hit a lick, but they're actually 15th in weighted on base in the last 2 weeks, so figured something out at least a little bit here over the last 14 days. And so I'm going to take Paul Skeens at a small price and hope that they can continue on hitting the ball a little bit better, and then keeping this Phillies team pressed down again without Bryce Harper.
Well, win-loss is not a pitcher's stat, right? Mm-hmm. Not fair to put it all on the pitcher for obvious reasons. Skeens 4-6. Skeens is 4-6.
Yes.
And that, to me, is where I'm sitting here and I'm looking at it. Okay, so you're telling me I'm getting a plus money price with a team that would be with even pitchers, minus 215, minus 220, if you put even pitchers on the mound. And I'm getting plus 105 with Sanchez. By the way, not a bad pitcher here. It's not like we're getting bottom-tier starter. We're getting one of the better starters here for the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, give me the plus 105. I'll take a shot against Skeens.
It's going to be
a fun game.
I was going to say, at the very least, I mean, Skeens might have 10 Ks in this game.
What do you think? Is there a market out there for fastest game played today?
Yeah, this one would be.
This would be got to be the favorite,
this
right?
This one would be up there for sure. I mean, you've got two teams not hitting the ball very well. Pittsburgh strikes out a ton.
Yep.
So they're not going to hit a lot either. This is going to be so fun.
And Skeens likes to strike people out. I mean, this could be an hour and 45-minute
like
game.
Old school Greg Maddux start. Yeah. We're like, we look up and you're like, oh, it's been an hour and 32 minutes and the game's over.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Like, whatever. Greg Maddux was so good about that. If you ever needed to get to an appointment or do it and you were at a Braves game, it was great when Maddux was on the hill. You're like, oh, all right. I just need to block off like hour 45.
Cruises right along, man. So the total in this game is 6.5. We're in rain delay, by the way, right now. So this is going to be a delayed start. Any interest in the total? Because we both making cases as why we believe our team will win most likely 1-0.
Yeah, well, we missed the best of it, obviously, because it was a 7, and so that's unfortunate. But there's no way I'm going over here with the way that both of these teams are hitting right now.
I kind of wanted to play a contrarian over, and then I said, Mike, what are you doing? Don't be an idiot. And so I did not do that. If I got 3.5 first five, I'd actually be interested to the under, but it's 3. They're like literally saying, no, runs are more likely when the bullpens come in, so... Yeah, I ended up not playing the total, but I kind of liked under. If I could find a 3.5, 110, even a 120, I'd probably play under 3.5 first five.
If you're watching, we'll throw a tweet up on the screen real quick. There have been 90 occurrences all time of a Major League Baseball pitcher having a sub 210 ERA and 80 plus strikeouts through 13 starts of the season. Paul Skeens, who is 4-6 in 2025, is the only one to have a losing record. That is via OptiStats on the Twitter machine. So the only one to have a losing record.
I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard because like that low of an ERA and that high of a strikeout rate means that you're just mowing teams down.
Yeah.
Like just give him 3 runs.
Yeah.
3 runs a game and you got a winning record.
Yeah. 3 runs and he's winning.
Yeah.
Like most every start.
I mean, he has a complete game loss this year.
Yeah.
You don't even see complete games in Major League Baseball. He's got a complete game loss.
Rangers and the Nationals, Diamondbacks and the Reds, Cubs and the Tigers, Astros and the Guardians, they are all getting going here momentarily. Diamondbacks and the Reds, we talked a little bit about this last segment, Mike, but Zach Gallen, Brady Singer.
Yeah, I guess I'll go over. I mean, I stare, and this is, I'm literally not following my advice from the last segment. I stared at the over for like 15, 20 minutes this morning. I agree with the entire handicap we heard from Colby last segment where he basically said, look, both of these pitchers, they get hit. They give up runs. These are two offenses that are able to score runs.
Not Gallen of last year.
No, it is not Gallen of last year. And you look at the underlying numbers for both Gallen and Singer, it's like, nope, yep, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, they should be getting pounded. Sitting at 9.5, I'll take the over 9.5 here. This will be a late play for me, though, because it's not one that I had in the account this morning.
And then we do have the Cubs and the Tigers. Cade Horton, Jack Flaherty going here in this one. Flaherty actually been a little bit of a breath of fresh air for this Tigers team because they really needed someone to kind of step up and be the number two behind Skubal there. And Flaherty so far, again, not lighting the world on fire, but actually has better. Most of the time when we talk about expecteds, it's like, oh, the expecteds are worse, right? His expecteds are actually a little bit better. He's got the 3.72 surface ERA, but backed up with a 3.24 Sierra and a 3.41 XFIP. So Flaherty's been good.
Yeah, Flaherty has been good. Total sitting at 8. I'm going to play a prop here because I was shocked at the price. And maybe someone out there can explain to me why, and I might just be missing something. Kyle Tucker's plus 200 getting RBI. That's way too high. Kyle Tucker, 2-for-6 with 2 home runs against Flaherty. So he can hit him pretty hard. The lowest price to get an RBI in the game is Suzuki, who's plus 155. These are over at DraftKings. That is higher than I can remember seeing most games. Usually it's like plus 115, plus 120 is where the leader is. If you go and you're playing the Rockies on the road, you're playing the A's on the road, you'll see minus 120s, minus 140s sometimes if it's Judge or if it's Alonso or whatnot. But plus 200 on Tucker in this lineup with the wind not blowing in, it's a decent hitting day in Chicago, I think is a ridiculous price. So I'll take Tucker to record an RBI plus 200. I'll sprinkle just a little bit, 2 RBIs at 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only argument, I guess, or the reason it could be priced that way is just because he's hitting second in the lineup. So, like, you know, obviously if you're hitting third or fourth, it's just easier to collect RBI. But, yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's a one-swing thing, though. And it's a lineup that has depth at the bottom where I'd be surprised if he doesn't get at least one opportunity in this game with a runner in scoring position.
Yeah, these are all first pitches that are happening momentarily. So get in if you want to get in on those. Last one, Astros and Guardians. We just talked about that one, Brandon Walter and Tanner Bibee last segment as well. That first pitch is coming here in about 3 minutes. I guess I buried the lead as we came into the show today. Tri-box Matt hits yet again.
Jeez.
Two trifectas and two superfectas hit yesterday in the Belmont. That said, I lost money.
Should I get you a hat that says Tri-box Matt?
Yeah, I mean, but I lost money. Well, so it's nothing to really brag about here.
The
because
second
I,
word of that is the problem. The box part of it is why you can win bets and lose money.
Yeah. There were 8 horses. There were 4 that were short shots. All 4 of them were 1, 2, 3, 4 in this
almost in exact order, too. Yeah. That doesn't help.
We're 1, 2, 3, 4. And so I looked in and I'm kind of like, oh, that's not going to pay very much. And then I was like, wait a minute. That's less money than I started with. How is this even possible? And including how is this even possible? Carlos Alcaraz goes in a hole, even 2-0.
Yeah, no worries.
In the tiebreak. Gets it done in the tiebreak. We are going to a fifth. By the way, a quick reminder, these guys are 22 and 23 years old, so we're going to see this for the next 8 years.
Alcaraz minus 165 now. Do I cover? I have Alcaraz plus 800. Do I just take center plus 125 and just
just make sure
just
that you
make sure you're I win some money on a bet I probably should have never made?
Yeah, you're going to get a steak dinner out of it, like, no matter what.
And I say that center now plus 110, so center money coming in there. One more thing that I wanted to mention here, Matt, on the Tri-Box Matt thing, like it's the box part of it that we got to make sure we focus on. We just got to make you a smarter better now, and then we can just dial in on horse racing. But I'm sure that you made money yesterday because you hammered Patch Adams, right? Because I came on the show and I said, everyone go bet Patch Adams. I'm sure that you just put a bunch to win on Patch Adams.
Here's the problem. Everyone liked Patch Adams. It got down to like nothing. He didn't pay anything either.
It was 3-1 plus 300 winner. Give me one plus 300 winner in baseball today.
Our buddy Chris Felica goes on. He's just talking about how much he loves Patch Adams. Everyone loves Patch Adams. Gets down. Wait, can't make no money on Patch Adams anymore.
Can I put this in perspective?
Yeah.
Patch Adams paid more winning that race than the Rockies would if they won today.
Yeah. I know. I'm kidding. It was a good race by him for sure. Guys, ProfitX. We talk about ProfitX all the time. Peer-to-peer, so you're betting against guys like me and Mike. You are not betting against the house. So go in, download, use promo code VSIN, and when you do, you can get up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. So again, it is an exchange, peer-to-peer exchange, not betting against the house. Download ProfitX, promo code VSIN, up to $200 in profit cash over your first month.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Mike Somich talking over the break of just, you know, if we could get one more guy to emerge in tennis and we would get another big three where we had the big three with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. We were treated to ridiculously awesome finals in all of these Grand Slams just, you know, for, like we said, over a decade. We've got the two guys, the two young dudes are 22 and 23. We can get one more to emerge and get another big three, Mike. I mean, tennis is in a pretty good spot.
It's an incredible spot. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you handicap this tournament and everyone pre-flop is like, it's Sinner Alcaraz. A lot could happen in the other quarters, and that's why tennis betting is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You can bet the other quarters, so who's going to win their specific part of the draw, and then you just play Sinner Alcaraz in the finals here. And to get them is one thing, to actually get the match. But to be in a fifth set where you've had two sets at 6-4, two sets at 7-6, yeah. Amazing comeback from Alcaraz in the fourth set to extend this match. I mean, just phenomenal high-level tennis. And like you said, if we just get one more,
yeah,
just one more, all of a sudden the next 10 years of this sport is just going to be electric.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, you watch these guys and you understand, like, they're not even at their best right now. I mean, two more years, like, they get 24, 25 years old.
They're not in their prime.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's when we're going to get the absolute very best out of these guys. It's going to be unreal to watch, for sure.
Imagine being this good and being like, I could be better.
I know. Like, I know. There's golf going on up in Canada, TPC Toronto. Your current leader is Shane Lowry. That said, he is through eight holes. So there are two guys in Mateo Montecero and Ryan Fox who haven't even teed off yet. So they are going to be chasing. Cam Champ is one stroke back, and he is only through five holes. Jake Knapp is only one stroke back. He's only through two holes. And there's just a slew of guys at 13 and 12 under in this tournament. Mike, you put a name in a hat, pull it out. That's who could win this thing.
See, that's why I actually wanted to ask you this, yeah. Right? My assumption is someone who doesn't bet golf a ton, but as someone who bets a lot.
Yeah.
When you're seeing minus 15, minus 14 after two rounds, it just invites variance, right?
Yeah, that's
like
why.
You can play a lot of different people. Like, if I wanted to take a shot at Cam Young at 22-1.
Yeah, my card this week, because I made the assumption that we didn't have a ton of data on this course, right? So it's not a course they go to regularly. So, but I just, the assumption was that it was going to play fairly low. So my card this week was started at 40-1
yeah.
on dudes. I had a 40-1, a 67-1, a 72-1, because we talk about it all the time. The thing that actually separates these guys is the course,
yeah.
right? Like, every one of these guys is awesome.
Yeah.
And we're seeing this right now as we look down and there are 20 guys at 12 under or better in this tournament right now. And if we want to go to double digits, you can scroll all the way down. There's 32 guys at 10 under or better this tournament.
The cut was under par.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you all you need to know, right? That everybody was under par. Right now, there is one person, Justin Lowry, who's one over, but he is one over after the cut, right? He's shot in three over after the cut. So that makes a difference there. Am I crazy? Cam Young, 22-1. Four holes in.
No.
Two back.
Not at all. Not at all.
Because he's the name I know.
Yeah, well, and I mean, for him, a 68, 66, 65, we haven't seen three good rounds in a row from Cam Young in quite some time. That's been the knock on him, was the fact that it was not consistent. And who knows? Maybe he's just feeling it up there. You know,
just flashed to 25-1. I wonder what bad just happened. Maybe I'll take some of my Alcaraz money and I'll put it on Cam Young here.
Yeah, there
right?
you go.
I mean, just.
Oh, well, you're just assuming.
He broke him. He broke Sinner first game.
You're just assuming here.
You played tennis, didn't you?
Yeah.
I played tennis. It is so demoralizing to have a commanding lead in a match and then just get clawed back on.
Yeah.
It is the hardest thing to play a final set after you, if it's a five-set match, if you won the first two and all of a sudden you find yourself in five. If it's a three-set match, you win the first one and you're in control in the second. All of a sudden you find yourself in the third. Trying to play your best tennis mentally is so difficult in that last set.
I went a little fun fact here. I went to nationals in tennis. No, like adult league, like old man, old man league, but it was they guy decided that it was his goal to put together this really good tennis team,
okay.
And so we like plowed through the regionals, whatever, ended up in nationals, and then got absolutely destroyed.
Oh, yeah, just smoked.
Then
yeah.
just got absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, we always joke about how good golfers are.
Yeah,
tennis players. Oh boy.
Yeah,
like the gap.
Complete different level. You wouldn't win a single point against either one of these guys.
You couldn't touch their serve.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't win a single point.
If the serve went directly at you, you would try and get out of the way instead of hit the ball. Like, it's just a different world.
They would hit a winner off your serve, like, you know, 80% of the time. And then
they'd be halfway in the baseline. Yeah. Second serves are going like 100 miles per hour in some of these matches, and they're just like smoking them.
Just is what it is. 1-0 right now, Alcaraz, and he has a 30-0 lead there in the fifth set, as we do each and every Saturday and Sunday when Mike is on the desk with me here. We're going to look at the ice. We're going to look at the track. Let's start over in the hockey world.
Technical regulation size or what?
It's time to ask Mike Somich, what the fuck?
Don't you ever touch my puck?
Only a couple of these left.
Yeah, we're digging.
Only a couple of these left. Hockey is going to be gone rather soon, but hey, we got two bets to put in people's account.
We do. And one of these, the first one here, is assuming you listened last week.
Okay.
Because last week we put Sam Bennett at 30-1 to win the Conn Smythe. Mm-hmm. And we played a little bit of Florida. It's now 1-1 in the tournament. Sam Bennett now, by the way, this third favorite at 6-1. So great price that we have on Sam Bennett after he scored 3 goals in the first 2 games. Let's come back in and get some McDavid action now. Because we've got the 31 ticket.
Okay.
If the Oilers win this series, McDavid wins the Conn Smythe, period, game over, end of sentence. No way that it's not going to be McDavid after what he did in those first 2 games. So let's take McDavid plus 105 to go with our Bennett ticket. Now we're guaranteed profitable here if either team, in my mind, wins the series. Because I do think Bennett should be favored over Bob. I still don't even mind Bennett at 6-1 if you want to take that ticket if you like Florida. So let's round out our portfolio there. I think that gives us a very good chance of hitting either of those, no matter who wins the Stanley Cup. So let's get that in there. And if, by the way, if you like the Oilers, I would still bet McDavid. If you think the Oilers are going to win the series, just take the McDavid plus 105. Because there is a world now where he wins this if they lose, if he continues to play at the level he does, and this is a 7-game series, and there's no one that stands out from Florida. This series, talked a little bit about it before it started, is an over series. Absolutely nothing changed my opinion watching those first 2 games. You are going to see goals in every one of these games, especially if Florida is willing to play the same style that we are seeing Edmonton play. Edmonton going through the neutral zone with speed. They're carrying the puck into the zone, pushing the Florida defenseman back. That's creating opportunities for them. It also is creating opportunities for Florida when they turn the puck over and they try and do that. Because if you turn the puck over at the blue line heading into the zone, you're going to see these quick returns, right? You're going to see the transition offense from the other team. We saw that in the overtime where Florida got the goal because of a turnover. I think you're going to see Edmonton continue that style and Florida be able to get into their game with the forecheck. All of that creates more goals. We saw a 6 in game 1, 6 in game 2. We're up to 6.5 here. Played the over in both 2. Let's play the over in game 3 here, minus 102.
Let's head to the track.
Saddle up, partner. Want to bet the horses with Mike Somich?
When I bet on horses, I never lose. Why? I bet on all the horses.
It's time to pony up.
Giddy up.
Did not get it done yesterday in the black for me. A red Belmont for me yesterday. But as we said,
that's good in golf.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. We say this, every time we do this. If I bet $1 in the Belmont and then I win $1, or if I bet $1 today in one of these other races, I still win $1.
That is correct.
Like it's the same money. So even though there's no fancy name,
we're not going to Canada.
There's no long broadcast, and we're not going to do. At least you're in here with me.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, I am.
But we're going to head back to Saratoga.
We are.
And we're going to get a couple of winners.
Two races that got taken off the card yesterday. So completely removed from the card, placed as the 12th and 13th race today, which means we get 2 grade 1 stakes today, Matt. These are the best of the best at what they do. We'll start out here with the 12th race, 5.5 furlongs on the turf, the grade 1 Jiper Invitational. I like the 4 horse here.
Invitational.
It's not actually.
I was going to say, they're not inviting these horses.
It just got trumped off. Let's just be honest. They're just throwing it on the back to make it interesting. I like the number 4, My Boy Prince here, 10-1 on the morning line. This is a horse that was in the Canadian Triple Crown, ran 2nd in the King's Plate last year, flipped over to the turf. It's run very well. I like this horse turf sprinting, something that he has not done a lot in his career. Was able to get to win over the Aqueduct Turf Course last time out in the seasonal debut. Now 2nd off the layoff, jumps back up into grade 1 company. I think has tactical speed, but can also close. My Boy Prince, 4 horse, 10-1, Matt.
Now, have we had some of these horses before?
We have.
Coppola as well?
Coppola, Think Big, AG Bullet, which is Silver Bullet, AG, the periodic symbol for silver.
Okay.
Alagone has to be in your try, the 8.
I thought we've had some of these before, because isn't Coppola like owned by the Coppola or something?
Coppola is owned by Hammer Time Stable.
MC. MC Hammer is getting... Okay, let's go to 13.
Yeah, one more race here. Race number 13 on the card, the Grade 1 Manhattan. You'll recognize some of these names as well. Spirit of St. Louis, we've talked about quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's your favorite at 5-2, the 6 horse. Let's go with the number 4 again. Carson's Run, 12-1 here. Love Saratoga, especially over soft turf. 2 for 3 on the course. Has won with some given the track. Let's go with the number 4. Carson's won 12-1.
You want to bet along with Mike? FirstBet.com is the place to do it. 1STBET.com. Use that promo code VEASAN200 to get 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Again, that's FirstBet.com. 1STBET.com.